everyone. Welcome to episode 75 of the Card Hoarder Podcast. Normally your weekly source for Magic Online news, but this week we will be a special Nationals recap edition. U.S. and Canadian Nationals receiving most of the attention in the Magic world, but if you want to hear more in-depth coverage on those tournaments, I suggest checking out the First Strike podcast with the Canadian National Champion, and of course the Game podcast with Jerry Thompson. He finished in second place in U.S. Nationals, so check those out. I'll put those in the show notes. So let's get into introductions. My name is Connor. I am the host and editor for the podcast. No Nathaniel this week, but we have a very special guest joining me. He is the new Irish national champion. I've actually never heard of this guy before. I don't think we've had him on the podcast before because normally my co-hosts don't win tournaments. jokes aside, the champ is here, Mr. Dave Murphy. Congrats, man.
Obviously, you added stuff after, but there better be John Cena music playing right here. But thanks very much, Connor. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. I called it last week. I was like, hopefully we're going to be celebrating Dave winning, and I might have to spice that in. I'm a genius. Next week, we'll talk more about Arena more in depth and hopefully celebrate Dave winning Irish Nationals. Yeah, come on, Dave. Get it.
Thank you.
Alexa.
Mystic Mac, that's what they call Conor McGregor, right? Irish
sure.
Predictions.
Yeah. Oh man, this is great. This is gonna be an amazing episode because we're going full Irish on this episode. So we also have a special guest joining us on the line. He helped organize Irish Nationals. You may recognize his voice too from the Nerd Eye podcast and our wrestling podcast, WCW versus NWO. Mr. Fergus Looney, how's things?
Hey Connor, how are things? I'm pretty tired, but it was good. Well worth the effort and expenditure to do it. So
yeah, same. It sounded like quite the weekend. Good and I wouldn't say bad, but tedious maybe is a good word to say that.
No, I mean it was mostly good. There was a couple of hiccups, but nothing that you wouldn't expect to be out of the ordinary for running something on that scale. So just glad to do it. More than anything, glad to see people show up and play, and it was very, very cool to see Dave win.
Yeah, definitely. So I got a few questions for you, Gus, off the bat. So later on, I would love to hear kind of your side from organizing Nationals. But first, I want to start off with how you know Dave, because I know you've known him for a while. When did you guys first meet, and how did you guys become friends?
So I started playing Magic, I want to say, around the release of the original Ravnica. So that's about... must be a little over 10, 12 years now. I probably went to a pre-release tournament first, and I learned of a local shop that was called the Fourth Dimension.
Sweet name.
yeah, they were, and it sat underneath the third place, which was the comic shop. So yeah, that's probably where I would have met Dave, and then we used to travel to pre-releases, or they were kind of like monthly tournaments run by an organizer by the name of Jim Brophy. And so we would go out and we'd do terribly, and we'd inevitably end up drafting at like 6 p.m. on whatever day it was, and sitting in wherever the tournament was on until it closed as people are cleaning up stuff around us. So yeah, we would have traveled together. We started going to like things like PTQs and Nationals, and then I guess eventually Grand Prix. And so yeah, we've been playing pretty much constantly, and he's been a very, very close friend since.
Yeah, I like to think sometimes I was the one left over. We've shed a lot of friends between us. We're actually like some of the only active players left from that original group, I think.
Pretty much, yeah. From Dublin, yeah. It's probably me and you, and then that's about it. Since a lot of them have left the country or doing other things, like real
life. Stop playing Magic. Yeah.
Gone on to worse games.
Or better. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know about better, to be honest.
Yeah. Sure. You know what I mean. Better is a relative term, I guess. Yeah, I guess that's the bummer thing about Magic is sometimes you just lose touch with some friends. But man, it's pretty impressive. That's a long time.
Yeah.
To be playing a game and being friends with somebody, so that's really cool.
Yeah, no, it's very, very cool. Yeah, God, you just reminded me all the... Nationals would have been the first big tournaments we probably went together. So.
Yeah, Nationals. I remember a lot of Jim's events because they were actually in... strangely enough, they were in the hotel you just ran Nationals at, right, Gus?
They did some of them.
Yeah, some of the releases. I remember Colts.
I remember most of his ones were in either the Royal Dublin, which doesn't exist anymore, or Wynn's Hotel. Particularly that story that we were reminded of with Cormac.
Do you want to tell that one or will I?
I think I'll tell it because it's far more entertaining for me. Dave, I don't know if you know Connor, but Dave is terrible at magic and has been for a very, very long time.
Well, yes, I've said this in the podcast. Yes.
But particularly when we were say first starting out, Dave. I think it's fair to say Dave would have been considered one of the worst players in the group.
Yeah,
but sure. Dave never stopped trying, and he was always constantly trying to push himself and get better. And there's one guy in particular who was a friend of ours called Cormac, who was very, very naturally good at playing Magic. Like, he's the guy that you know who doesn't test, doesn't practice, and kind of wanders in, but he has such a high floor of skill that he can just pick up a deck and play it. And he'll top eight, and he'll be like, oh yeah, you know, it's fine. And you're like, I played like for the last month, and you still did better than me. So we're doing this, a draft, like at one of Jim's events, and everybody's left. It's like, we're doing a Swiss draft. I want to say it's like Shadowmoor or Eventide that we drafted.
It must be Time Spiral because Magus of the Arena is in it.
Oh, was it? Okay, so then it's Time Spiral.
And Magus of the Arena out.
We're waiting on Corm and Dave to finish. They're the last round, the last match of the last round. Dave has been stuck on mana for red mana for easily 5 to 10 turns of the game. And if he ever draws red mana, Cormac is dead. So Cormac draws his card for the turn, and he's looking at it, and Dave is starting to get frustrated because Cormac is slow. He'll be very, very methodical about his approach, and he's like, Corm, listen, it doesn't matter what you do. If I draw a mountain, you're dead because this is going to happen and you're dead. And he's like, no, Dave, I'm going to go through this. And he proceeds to take like 5-10 minutes. So Dave is sitting there just getting more and more frustrated, and I'm sitting alongside watching, and I know his hand, and I know that he's going to kill him provided he draws a mountain. So eventually Corm does exactly that, what Dave says, tries to narrow down what Dave can draw before he can kill him, and he finally passes a turn. So Dave untaps, he draws his card, and it's the mountain, slams it on the table, shouts in Cormac's face, and he goes, mountain! Does whatever it is to kill Cormac, and in his excitement to beat Cormac, because I think you did, it was very rare that you actually won a match against Corm at this stage.
I think it might have been one of the first sanctioned matches.
Yeah, so it's one of the first times he's ever beaten Cormac, and in his excitement he grabs a water bottle, spikes it on the table, which then lands directly in Cormac's face. And Dave starts running around the room in celebration. Meanwhile, Cormac just kind of looks at the table and is like, oh yeah, he did kill me. Scoops up his cards.
Dave, what a scumbag.
He's pretty scummy. When we say he's so, like, later on he became very good at magic. He went to worlds and stuff like that, and
He'd already gone to Worlds at this point.
This was after Worlds.
Yeah.
He'd just become a stalwart of kind of the community and one of the better players. And I started playing right before him and beat him at like his first pre-release or his first PTQ. But I rarely took a game off him after that. So to have to sit there for 10 minutes and watch him go over a play that we all knew he could make, it was very frustrating. I also didn't mean to hit him in the face with the bottle. That was just a
sure.
Yeah. I guess I see. Yeah, that makes a little bit of sense. You gotta celebrate your wins when you get them. So
mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's fantastic. Wow. So we've come full circle here. Long journey. We get Nationals back, or I guess old Nationals, quote unquote, back. We'll talk about maybe some of the differences in a little bit. Yeah. So. Let's get into Irish Nationals here. So, Dave, you ended up playing mono red, and I had a few questions about this decision because I know Jerry Thompson and Brian were very low on mono red going into Nationals. That seemed to actually reflect the metagame going into U.S. Nationals tournament because I think red did pretty poorly in that. So, Jerry and Brian were actually pretty spot on with that. But how did you actually finalize your deck choice, and was Teamer Energy or Blue-Black ever in the running?
So I actually talked to Jerry a little bit. He gave me some advice on the blue-black deck and how he thought it could evolve about a week before Nationals, so just like the Monday after Worlds or whatever. He was really nice to give me a bit of feedback. But I couldn't win a game for the life of me. I think the blue-black deck is really fragile. It really doesn't have a good time recovering. It has no damnation effect to like catch it back up on twos is just really bad. I couldn't buy wins with it. I went 310 or something online, and you shouldn't always let your online results influence you. You should look at matchups carefully and what you're getting paired against and why you lost, and that's something I know I fail to do sometimes. But I couldn't bring myself to even begin put more testing time into a deck. I couldn't buy a game win. So either two things were happening, either blue-black wasn't good enough, or I was not good enough with the deck and I didn't know if a week would help, because maybe I do get good enough with the deck in a week. But if I don't, what else am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to audible to? That isn't great. So it kind of came down to a bit of, I had done my brewing a week before. I went 7-2 in a PTQ with the Monument deck, and all those decks also felt a bit short. So I looked at Teemer or Mono Red. I talked to a lot of people I respect, get their opinions on them. A guy I ended up playing in the quarterfinals, Alex Ball. He was on a very similar list to me, and I talked a lot about it to him. And I tested about decks. I got the best results with Mono Red, you know, percentage-wise. I only have 1-5-0 in a standard league at the moment, and that is the Mono Red deck. But I also know the sideboard pretty perfectly with it. After a couple of attempts, it's not too hard to figure out how to sideboard with the red deck. Where the Teemer deck, I got some good results with, but I felt I was leaving a lot of percentage points post-board behind. And I didn't know what I wanted in my board. I didn't know how I wanted to board. That ruled it out for me. I'm not going to go to a major tournament that I have, you know, some real intent on winning if I'm going to play the same matchup twice and board a different way each time. That's just not very acceptable, I think. So I went with the deck I knew best. And I don't disagree with some of what the pros are saying, that Wire Red is bad. You know, it's not good against Teemer. A lot of decks have a plan against it. Some decks are coming out of the, you know, woodwork that are have decent red matches because it's like stage one of the format. But it's still a deck that really punishes slip-ups. It's a deck that I like because it really punishes misplays as well and miss-sideboarding, which I can count on a little bit more at Irish Nationals level than I could at a different event. And I still think it's over-exaggerated how quote-unquote bad it is. You could argue it's not good for the weekend because you're expecting a lot of Teemer, but I don't think you could ever just call it a bad deck.
Yeah, I don't know if they were, a lot of pros were calling it a bad deck, but I think they were just kind of saying that, why are people so confident in their red matchup, I guess, or playing with red, why are they so confident with it, I guess. I guess they were just trying to take it down a notch.
There is one thing I'll say about it, it's extremely consistent.
Yep.
So any other deck I played, my blue-white monument deck is an example of this. When it gets its exact cards it needs and its lands come into play untapped, it will beat nearly any deck in the format. It doesn't really have a bad matchup outside approach or something, where if we both draw our good cards, like, I'll win the majority of the time. And the tokens deck in the metagame at the moment are the same. If my lands come into play untapped and I draw the right combination at the right pacing, I'll win the game. But red doesn't really need that. You know, it has a great curve. It has a good burn package. It has Hazoret, which is one of the more absurd mono red cards played in the last couple of years. It does the same thing over and over again. Its lands do not come into play tapped, which I'm very sick of in this format in general. And there's something to be said for that coming into a tournament, just knowing what your deck is going to do.
So for the actual tournament, how many rounds of draft and standard were there on Saturday? And then I assume Sunday was just top 8, correct?
Yes, Sunday was just top 8. There were 4 rounds of standard and 3 of draft. We were only actually, I did the maths there, it was like 3 people away from getting an extra round.
Yeah, it was very close.
Yeah. What happens is there was only 91 people there, and the next threshold is 129. Yeah, 129 gets you 8 rounds. And for every person with 1 bye, it counts as putting 2 extra people in the system. And for every person with 2 byes, it counts as putting 4 extra people in the system. Because, you know, a bye is essentially you play someone, you get a win, but that person drops from the tournament, if you want to look at it like that. So with all the byes in the tournament, we are actually only a couple people off making the next threshold, which would have been nice. I think 8 rounds would have made it a bit more pleasant, I want to say. I don't know. Coming into top 8, there was a bit of a squeeze, and a good friend of mine missed on OMP, and essentially an X11 didn't make it, and that's never a nice feeling.
So you drafted, it looked like a sick-looking white-black Vampires deck, so I assumed you quick 3-0'd with that. I'll let you take it over in a second. Anything of note during the Swiss, whether it's your draft deck or in standard? Good matches or misplays or anything or interesting judge calls, could you recall?
So I got really lucky with my first round off the bat. I had 1 bye going in, by the way. We'll talk a bit later about the buy system, I think, especially with Gus, because I don't think it's appropriate for smaller tournaments like this. But I got off my buy, and I had done a bit scouting. I knew what my opponent was playing. He was on Teemer. And in game two, I don't think I should have won. In game two, he doesn't Essence Scatter Earthshake or Kangra in turn four or five. I go to play it, and he says, wait, and then goes to play an Essence Scatter but doesn't. And I've played with this guy for years. He's been playing nearly as long as I have. So I know he's not one to tell me to wait in order to bluff something. He said wait because he all of a sudden remembered he had an Essence Scatter and then decided to let it resolve, I think, to play around a Hazoret coming down next turn. But the counter made his block so bad that turn that I easily won over the next couple of attack steps. And afterwards he said he regretted not scattering it. As I said, someone makes a mistake against a red deck, they're just dead. There's no recovering. Mm-hmm. That's the example there. I had a very interesting judge call in round four against Esper Gifts. A team of this tournament is my opponent stumble and I killed him. Now, that's also my deck choice doing that, but I did get lucky at stages. I played against Esper Gifts and I thought my opponent might not know the interaction between Soulscar Mage, Shock, and Champion of Wits. And for those listening that don't know it, if I shock a Champion of Wits with a Soulscar Mage out, my opponent doesn't get to draw any cards if they choose to do the trigger. They only discard because it will die as a 0-2 or whatever. It will remember its last power, which was 0. I play a Soulscar in turn 1 and I choose to play off curve because the hand they've kept makes it seem like they have a champion in hand and I think they won't know the interaction. On Modo, if it happens, you click yes. You know, your opponent accidentally clicks yes and they just discard. In paper, it's a lot more complex because what you have to do is let them try and resolve the ability. So let them try and go draw cards and stop them before they draw and tell them they have to discard. So it's a little awkward.
How did you phrase that, Dave?
How did you do it? Against my opponent?
Yeah, yeah.
So it doesn't actually get to happen in the end because what happened was I left one open. He got stuck on two lands. I left one open for nearly the whole game. And eventually when he hits his third land, he slams champion. And in response, I kill it with a magma spray, not a shock. So it gets removed from the game. And he goes, I can resolve my trigger. I'm like, yes, you can resolve your trigger if you want. And he went, okay. But then went, wait, it's exiled. Do I draw cards when it's exiled? I'm like, oh, you better ask Judge about questions. Because I don't want to actually hint at what's happening, that it died with counters on it or whatever, you know. I just want, and it's complex. I'm like, I just want you to ask a judge. I'm like, judge can answer questions better than me. So he calls the judge. Judge comes over and he shows him the board state and all he asks is, do I draw cards now? Which is the correct question because the judge can't say no. He's asking, does he draw cards because the card is exiled? But that's not how he phrases his question. He phrases it, do I draw cards now? And then the judge, of course, has to say no. With that board state, he does not draw cards. So he goes ahead and doesn't do the trigger. And after the game, you know, I win because he's missed his third land drop twice and I got to kill his only blocker, so I run away with it. But after the game, I asked him, did he know that interaction? He's like, oh no, I would have definitely went to draw cards. So it's just funny my opponent chose to ask the question the correct way to avoid getting mind-rotted.
What did the judge say?
Well, he didn't ask anything about it being removed. He said, the champion is getting removed by a magma spray. On the current board, do I draw cards, essentially? It was phrased like slightly differently. But, you know, I knew the judge, and if I thought they would have given anything away, I might have intervened.
That's interesting, because I'm pretty sure, like, it's a while since I've been a judge, but it sounds like the judge answered that incorrectly.
At the time, I thought he might have, but I have to get the exact... I might ask him. Maybe I'm getting the phrasing wrong, but the exact way he phrased it... You know, the judge, he's like, if I let the trigger resolve now, do I draw cards or do I just discard cards? And the answer to the question is, if at this moment you resolve the trigger, yes, you would get to, just discard cards.
Like I'm saying, it's a while now, they might have changed the policy on it, but if I was that judge in that spot, my answer would be, if you let this resolve and you choose to let the trigger, you will draw cards equal to its current power and then discard two cards.
That's true. I guess he could have phrased it like that.
Because the whole point is that you're not meant to tell them exactly what it is, but you still...
Right.
You give them enough information to figure it out.
That's fair. That could have been actually a pretty good way for the judge to phrase it. I might have another talk with him. But it was interesting that he meant to ask a completely different question of the judge.
When you got there anyway.
Yeah, his phrasing helped him not because the judge felt he was compelled to tell him how the board state would resolve.
But weird interaction.
Real weird interaction. And I asked a couple of people and they didn't know about that. I told a couple of friends of mine who were playing Champion of Wits to look out for that. Maybe I shouldn't, but I'm not exactly that cutthroat. The tournament's big enough that I probably won't play them, you know.
So what about your draft then? Did you firmly just start with vampires? Did you just start with like a removal spell, then got into vampires? Or did you open something right off the bat?
The draft was actually kind of hard to navigate. And the draft at these are always hard to navigate because I'm going to do so many more drafts than the average player. There's only going to be maybe like 10 people in the room that have drafted close to as much as I have. And I wouldn't be surprised if I still by far, you know, have done the most drafts there. So my evaluations of cards are going to be a lot different than other people's evaluations of cards. And I think that showed up in this draft. So it ended up that a person two or three down to the right of me was also in vampires. In pack one, I first pick Vraska's Contempt. Easy pick, extremely good in the format. I get some random black cards, second pick, it's an average card, and I get a couple blue cards. But there's no real direction to my deck. I'm looking at blue-black pirates, but I'm not getting that many pirate cards. Turns out person directly to my right wasn't black-red pirates. That would have been a bad decision. I look at Merfolk for a little while because I pick up the Frost Ring Links. I don't know its new name.
The 2/2 for three.
Water Trap Weaver.
Yeah, that's the guy. The Water Trap Weaver, and I get a Frog Magic, which again, I don't know the real name of that, but that's what we've nicknamed the pump spell in...
Riverboon Herald or something.
Yes, something like that.
Thank God we have Gus here for the name.
River Herald's Boon, I think, is what it is, but yeah.
It's my magic skill is to remember random limited card names.
And I pick that up and try and hedge, but no green comes, so I'm getting worried I won't get into an archetype fast enough. And I'm getting worried that the people next to me are kind of just taking random good cards and colors like you would in a normal draft instead of going for archetypes, which is what you should do in this format. But then with my last fresh pack, so my last unseen pack, I get a Deacon, which is one of the more important common payoffs for vampires because they turn all your cards into threats. Now, the problem with Deacon is if you draft a set for the first 10 times, you know he's a decent card, but you mightn't get how important he is. And that's what's happened here.
Probably the most card for that archetype.
Yeah, arguably better than all its uncommon payoffs. So, like, Vampires is so good because its best payoff is at common. Like, people might see Bishop of the Bloodstain, the Drain Vampire. That guy's average at best. Like, I would definitely want Deacon in my deck and the majority of my Vampires deck over Bishop of the Bloodstained. The only card I have a creature at uncommon for Vampires I have over it is, like, the Glorifier of Dust, the Sarah Angel. But even then, I would only pick that first because it's better on its own and it can still go in other aggro decks. If I'm deep into pack three, I might be taking Deacons over it. So I'm like, okay, I'll take this. I had a few black picks because I tried to go black, blue pirates. That'll fit in. I have like one pirate. I have one vampire at the time as well. And then two or three picks later, the one tree vampire, the white two drop, I get that on the wheel. And there was a couple good cards in that pack, but I'm like, oh, this is really important in the vampire's archetype. It blocks early, and then it, you know, it gets a mark. It wears a mark of the vampire really well. It gets pumped by the Deacon. I also got a bit of a late mark of the vampire in that pack. So I'm like, okay, I'm in the right archetype. I only have six playables after pack one, but I found my archetype. I found my lane. On pack two, I get super rewarded. All the payoffs. I get a Bishop of Rebirth. I get some more Deacons. I get a bunch of just solid creatures and a bunch of removal spells. Three cards left in the pack. I get to pick up a Skullduggery, which is absolutely insane that late.
Nice. Yeah.
And I think I'm set. I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, after pack one, I was really scared, but I'm going to have a 10 out of 10 deck. If pack two is even a quarter as good, if pack three is even a quarter as good as pack two, my deck is a 10 out of 10. I'm making the top eight because I need two out of three wins here. I'm X1 going into draft. And pack three, I get two playables. I end up getting the two drop that you can give Indestructible, which is extremely good, a second or third pick. But then it completely dries up, and I end up picking some marginal cards that end up making the cut. Maybe two, maybe three cards altogether from that pack make the cut. So instead of my deck being like a 10 out of 10, it ends up maybe roughly a 7 because of the strength of some of pack two. But it's serviceable, and it's, I would say, an above average vampires deck, so I can't be too mad at it. It was just below expectation at that point, and a little worried.
So you did you go 2-3 or did you draw the last round?
I got to draw my last round. So I won my first round against the guy I was passing to. My second round is against the guy next to that, so the guy 2 to my left. So I had an idea that they were in some combination of green, blue, probably green, blue, red between them. Because what I passed, not even because I'm in black, white, but just because what I passed and what they passed me. Both of them ended up being base green, blue, with the semi-final opponent also splashing red and kind of being a ramp deck. Both matches went to 3 games. And the games where I drew both lands and spells in decent proportions, I won. I'm not saying they were easy. I'm just saying the games I dropped were, you know, I was stuck on 2 lands and got run over in both of them, and there's not much I can do about it. I think my deck was better than both my opponents. Don't mean that in a cocky way, but I think they both ended up, you know, destroying each other in one pack. So my deck ended up a bit better, and I got the idea the last round, which is lucky because I played a few fun games with my opponent for round 3, and he destroyed me. He was the guy passing to me, and he had an excellent black-red aggro deck that I think was just hands down better than my deck. So I got the idea in dough. As I said, 1x1-1 didn't make it, and we were sweating the entire round. Not me as much because I knew my OMP was good, but I was worried I just convinced someone to ID themselves out of the top 8. Because we joked, the guy that I drew with, I said this to his face, has a bit of a reputation of getting a bit nervous at IDs sometimes. You know, he's always a friend. He's always afraid he might be the one that ends up getting ID'd out of the top 8. I think he has a pretty big fear of that. We were talking in between the rounds because we knew we were playing each other in the last round. And he's like, oh, maybe I should play. I'm like, listen, I think 90%, we'll look at the standings, but I think 90% you're a lock. I'm never going to say 100% to you because I never say that to anyone, no matter how much I think they're a lock. I just feel too bad if something weird happened and they got out. But he was humming and hawing and finally went, nah, it's worth, you know, drawing. The 1% chance I get knocked out compared to the you know, 99% that I get to play my first Nationals top 8. Definitely doing it. But then as the round went to a close, there were people still playing up to the last couple minutes. And we started doing the maths and we found out if a certain person won, 2 x1-1s were knocked out. And that was definitely me or him at that stage. And it was all a sweat for nothing. We both made it easy. I was 4th, he was 6th. We weren't even close to next in line to get knocked out. But tense, and because of the short amount of rounds, an x1-1 didn't make it. A good friend of mine, Daniel Gilligan, didn't make it at OMP, even though he won his last round. And if a certain person had lost their last round, 2 people wouldn't have made it. Another person would have got knocked out of the top 8, which is, I think, insane for an event like that.
Yeah, that's a bummer. So we moved to Sunday then, and the metagame for Irish Nationals, it's mainly mono red, teamer, 4-color energy, and there's a lone Mardu Vehicles deck in the top 8. And you played teamer against teamer in the finals. What other matchups did you face?
Well, I faced the guy I mentioned earlier, Alex Ball. I think easily the best player in the country. I faced him in the quarters. And that was a bummer because our captain this year is called McKaylee. I want to say Garvin is how you pronounce his second name. Gravin?
Gravina.
Gravina. I can never pronounce his second name. He was on the team last year. He's captain this year. Alex was our captain last year, and of course I was on the team last year. So we really wanted to get the repeat, just run the exact same 3 people back. We work well together. We enjoyed our time in Rotterdam, you know, sharing accommodation. That was all good. But I had to face him in the quarters. We knew each other's main decks and sideboards. We had been comparing notes all week. He is the reason I ended up cutting like a Kari Zev in the main deck for another Harsh Mentor. We both had the Ferocidons and Kari Zev main deck. It was nice knowing that at least if I lost, a good friend of mine and a very good player has a possibility of making it on the team. On the other hand, you know, you got to knock a good friend out of the top 8 and that sucks. So I got to be on the play because he ended up 5th. And this is where my luck really starts to kick in. Neither of the games are close to being games. He gets flooded in the first game. Could kill me if he had any real action beyond... if any of the 3 lands he draws is an action spell, I'm probably dead. He doesn't, so I kill him. Next game on turn 6 or 7, his board state is 4 mountains. His hand is 3 Trogdors, 3 Glorybringers. So he just loses to my onslaught of creatures, and it takes, I think, no more than 10 minutes. Every other game is still playing after that.
Yeah, it was about 20 minutes, I think.
Yeah, that's between, you know, quipping to each other and sideboarding and and talking to the games next to us because it's Irish Nationals and it's a bit more relaxed.
Yeah, gotta love mono red mirrors,
mono,
man.
Mono red mirrors, yeah.
I was certainly appreciative of them.
Then I get to play Teemer in the next round, and again, super uneventful. The guy keeps, James' his name, he keeps two, he's on Teemer Black as well. He keeps two land hands and never sees a third land until way after it's relevant in both games.
So I'm guessing you didn't spike the water bottle this time after you won?
I missed his head, though.
I made sure to keep him away. Yeah.
You just tackle Dave this time?
Yeah. This is not the time to get DQ'd.
Yeah. Do you have like a Dave like warning or like do not do this? You have like a rule that's like on the board?
I take out a list and I read it out to him before the tournament starts just so he can be refreshed. Yeah.
So that was not, like, it's always nice to be in the finals, and this event ended up being way easier than it should have been. I think this is like the best run of luck I think I've ever had for an event, full stop. I've had some good sealed pools and limited PTQs, but I've still had close games. But all through the weekend and the top eight, any time I didn't get mana screwed or flooded, I just won the games easily enough. And the games where I did get flooded, you know, two of them came in the same match, my only loss, and then I got to spread them out nicely between every other game, every other match of the weekend, which meant I won 2-1 a lot, and the game I lost would have been a mana screw or a flood. So you have to get a little bit lucky sometimes with those things, and I definitely did. The final against Dave Wolf, and I really like Dave Wolf. He's a really good player from Dublin. He's been playing about 3 years, and he keeps getting better and better every time I see him. I love that Nationals are back, really specifically for players like Dave, because I feel without events like Nationals, someone like Dave might end up losing interest in a couple of years, you know. GPs aren't always easy to travel to. You have other things happening in your life. If you don't have something in your local community to keep you invested competitively, people like that can just fall off. So I'm really happy that he won. I'm really looking forward to working with him for the Worlds team. These were like the closest games of the weekend, of the Sunday, but they weren't even close. He kept respectable hands with good creature curves, but he just managed not to draw any removal spells. He just got really unlucky and didn't draw like any removal spells over two games. And if you do that against red, even if you have a really good curve with some Virtuosos and Rogue Refiners, you're not going to win. I think the only removal spell he played was like a Glorybringer in game two, and that's, or game one, and that's when I had Hazorad out already. So the game was just already very over with me throwing my excess cards in hand at him. So I got to be national champion, and as much as I would have loved to be on the team no matter what, I'm of course going to take a finals when I walk into nationals. If someone tells me, you don't have to play a game, you're on the team, but you're going to come second, I'll take that. But I've been waiting so many years to win a nationals.
Yeah, I mean, we've pleaded, we've complained on the podcast to bring nationals back so this can happen. And hey, thank you, Wizards. We finally made it happen.
I don't have to listen to this anymore.
Gus will be able to speak a lot more about this to me, because he got to talk to a lot of players over the weekend and gauge a lot of reactions. It's not perfect yet.
Yeah. So that's where I wanted to go, because Dave, you wrote about some of your feelings on Nationals in an article, which I'll post in the show notes as well. So, and I think you mentioned that this felt like old Nationals, but still needs some work. So Gus, what is some examples that Dave is referring to?
I mean, I'm going to be kind of beating a dead horse, because Dave has already said these over the many, many different podcasts that you guys have recorded. For me, like Dave, because we were present for the older version of Nationals, we're way more able to explain like how much it meant and how much it can help bring communities together. So to be fair, I think this was a good step to start off with. Like, we were able to get just under 100 players into the same room to play a tournament in Ireland. I think the last time that happened was probably another Nationals.
So for comparison, how much would you get for like a WMCQ then?
I think the best one we ever did, we ever ran ourselves from the shop point of view, I think was about 60. So that's probably about the limit. So before that, yeah, the last time we had that many people would have been the last Nationals. And even at that last Nationals was a combined Ireland. So that would have been the North and South, whereas now they're separate again. So there's definite growth in the country. There's lots of people. There were a lot of new players at this event, like lots of people I'd never met before, had never experienced Nationals before. Some of them weren't really aware of how drafting worked, all that kind of stuff. So you get a real wide mixture of people from old guard to new guard, which was great. I really do think it should be 2 days. It should be a full 12-round event so that people can get the full experience. They get to see what it's like to like take a couple of losses. Like Dave was saying, and it's really harsh on and to expect somebody to only lose one round of Magic if they're going to win a tournament. Like, you're talking somebody's win expectancy to be over 90%, which is crazy to think about when you put it in terms. When you see guys like Hall of Famers and they have their lifetime stats is like 66%, which is also mental to begin with. And then you're going, well, if you want to win a tournament, you have to be another 30% on top of that probably, which is a lot. Whereas old 12-round nationals, we used to go 8-4 was the marker. You wanted to be 8-3-1, really, which is like 20-25 points to make the top 8. I think mostly it's boiling down to making a slightly longer tournament to give more people the chance to draft. And also because it might encourage people to stay. And then you get to meet more people and you get to see what people are doing from different parts of the country, because a lot of the guys there, some of them had never traveled very far for a tournament, for example. I know in particular there was a large group of people from Kilkenny, which has a shop now that would have started after Nationals had ended. So the vast majority of their player base had never seen it before. But because of the two guys who run it, who are really, really good guys and do a really, really good job at their store, they've managed to convince people, like, look, this is worth it. This is going to be really, really good. And they all traveled and they all seemed to have a really good time. And that's kind of the main thing. I was just really, really happy to get that many people into that tournament to get them to see what it's like to play a bigger style. Because really, at the moment, Wizards only provides PPTQs for that kind of level. And it's not really quite enough, I don't think. And because of the scale at which it is and the prize, which isn't really that great, and it's all put on the TO to provide for, it really doesn't translate very well. Whereas something like Nationals, it's a very tangible goal. You get to play on, okay, it's not the Pro Tour, but it's an event that is equivalent to a Pro Tour.
Yeah, and you get pro points. I think, Dave, you got three pro points, right?
I'm told I'm getting five. Three for winning, and then you get two for just showing up to Worlds.
Wow, okay.
That's awesome. I have to double check, but I've been told that. But that's insane.
Which is, if that's true, now I don't know it myself, that's a big leg up for somebody from a smaller country. For somebody, I know for us, it's not too difficult to get to European GPs, so it is a plausible thing for us to go travel. But for somebody, say, like when you were talking to Willie last week, granted their nationals is probably harder in terms of density of good players, but if somebody new were to get that, that's 5 points that they probably don't have access to normally, because they only have like a GP in their region once a year. So if they want to be a pro player, this makes a massive difference for getting them towards that goal. And it's just a cooler thing to know, to know that I can be the Irish national champion. I think I'm sure you saw Dave's article, like, that's always what Dave has wanted to be. And he would regularly tell us this fact, no matter what. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely going to be other people who will now go and see it and go, I mean, if that scrub can win, why can't I win? you know, so it's a very, very cool thing. I mean, I know from my own personal experience, that's probably two of my best memories is making top 8 of a Nationals, because you had to do so well over a sustained period. And now I was unlucky enough that I didn't make those teams. But I still think that's probably one of the hardest type tournaments, and I was always very good at them because it tests your multi-format skill. So yeah, I think it's really, really cool that they brought it back. It's a definite improvement over WMCQs. It means something so much more already. And it was very cool because for a lot of people, that's the first time they got to meet people from different parts of the country.
That's really cool. Yeah. I think it really translates to even viewers for like myself or U.S. nationals as well. It's just from the outside looking in, it looked like a resounding success.
Yeah.
For U.S., obviously from what I've heard from other countries, it sounds like it's a huge success. I wanted to talk about U.S. nationals a little bit. Either of you watch U.S. nationals? Gus, I know you said you watched a little bit. Dave, did you get the chance to watch any?
I have not got actually a chance to watch any yet. I've seen results, but I haven't.
Sure. Yeah, there was a few really cool takeaways from this. Because not only was this a interesting tournament to watch after the World Championship, I thought Wizards did a great job with coverage for this event. I mean, I think they lucked out a little bit with having Reduke doing commentary, because typical Reduke, he's awesome at everything.
Yeah, he was really good.
But the big thing is, he's the captain for the U.S. national team, so it was this excellent storyline in building like the U.S. team. He kind of gets to see kind of how his team is going to get crafted, and he kind of... Most times it's kind of awkward when like a pro's like or a commentator's cheering for somebody, but it's like, well, he has invested interest, so he can get a little bit emotional when Jerry made the team. And there was a nice picture when I think they embraced with a hug. Yeah, so
it's a very cool photo.
Yeah, I mean, Jerry Thompson and Oliver Tamako making the finals doesn't really hurt either. So I mean, they have a stacked team for the U.S. So obviously Reed's gonna be really happy. But I thought Wizards really well done. No glare problems, obviously, but. It was really easy to get interested in a kind of tournament, as I expected, as I've been saying on the podcast. So, home run. And I think it really sparks interest for the World Magic Cup, which we'll kind of get into now.
I think it's easier at these events to start stories of interest as well.
Yeah.
And it's a lot easier to have more personal insight on players. So, there was a bit of controversy before the player championships or... a couple of weeks ago where Spurring wrote an article rating, you know, the players at the event and didn't know who Javier Dominguez is, which is absurd to any European Magic player. Javier has been around for years and has been, you know, a higher-rated GP player for years.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a Platinum Pro, so it's not like he shouldn't be known by people making content or hard to get to know by people making content.
Is it out of the realm of possibility that Spurling was just, like... being Spurling. Yeah,
it's not outside the realm of possibility at all. But let's assume that he wasn't, and he isn't that up to date with non-American grinders. I guess non-Hall of Famer level grinders could be a better way of saying it.
Mm.
That is going to happen a lot less at American Nationals, because someone on the coverage team is going to know who the small fish is. Someone's going to know who Oliver Tmichael is, you know? They don't need to be that invested. You know, they just live in the country. They just have heard of people. They talk to so many Americans, and Americans are going to let people know, you know, this is the ringer. This is the guy that doesn't have results, but he's great, and it's just a matter of time. So it's this kind of personal coverage has a really nice feel to it, and I think it's a lot easier to create stories out of.
Yep, and that was the case with Oliver as well. I mean, I don't know how well-known he is on the international scale, but yeah, we do know him in the U.S. Not like the biggest player, but he's a guy that's growing, and he's probably going to have much more results in the future, hopefully. But the World Magic Cup is in Nice, France this year, and formats are Team Sealed and Unified Standard. So Dave, I'm sure you're ecstatic not to see Unified Modern this time around.
So happy. Also, Nice, I just assumed they were describing France, not naming a place. I was just waiting for them to, you know, have the location.
So bad.
Not even going to acknowledge that. That was awful.
Yeah, pretty happy it's not Modern again, for sure.
I mean, you've had an impressive 2 years in a row playing in the World Magic Cup. You got to play in your first Pro Tour at Pro Tour Hour Devastation. And sounds like a nice progression for Dave C. I think I heard you say on the stream you're almost bronze, and we said you might get three or five pro points from Nationals, which is helping big time. So what's next for Dave? Are you gonna try to make like a run for silver or gold, or is that a little bit too much to look forward to?
Well, it always just kind of comes down to how much money I can make off GPs. I'm not exactly flushed in cash. I don't have a bunch booked in advance. But I had a few booked already for this year. I'm going to Liverpool, not this weekend, next weekend. That's a limited GP. I know this limited format pretty well. So if I get my last 2 points there, you know, by the time Worlds rolls around, I get to go to all the RPTQs this year. If I've been informed correctly about how many pro points I get for this event,
don't forget what I shotgunned as well. Like,
yeah, exactly. I have to bring Gus to Team Pro Tour. Or the team RPTQ anyway. See if we can make it onto the Pro Tour.
Nice.
After that, we have Warsaw. I booked London, but I'm not 100% sure that's in the new year if I'm going. But I just booked it because it was 20, 30 euro for the flight. So I might as well have grabbed them. And Callie has some friends over there that she doesn't see too often. So she might take the opportunity to fly over and go hang out with them for a weekend. I'm deciding on Lyon. I don't know The original plan was the Friday before Lyon. It's the GP. It's the team GP before Worlds. I have a concert. There's a Queen of the Stone Age concert area I want to go to with Cali. And we already have two tickets. You know, Cali could bring a friend, but I'd much prefer to go. The thing is, the flights to Lyon are, you know, once a day. Out of one airline, do it like once a day. So I can't do both. And I have to decide in the next couple days which one I'm going to end up doing. I would like to wait till after Liverpool, because then I know how I stand. You know, if I've won money off Liverpool, how many GPs am I going to go to in the new year? I have a better idea. But I need to book with Wizardry soon. The cutoff date isn't like a week or something to book, because just Wizards things, I guess. So I'm undecided what to do around Worlds. And whether I pursue more pro points comes down to the next two or three GPs. So Warsaw, Liverpool, London. But a really good start to the year. Like, I think this is all under the first quarter, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
We've been confused before, and now we're going to be even more confused, because now we have an invested interest now.
Now I have a vested interest, so I better go find out. But then I heard people say something about this first quarter doesn't mean anything. Because this year, it's like still half of the year under the new system, under the old system. And then by the time the new system kicks in, I don't know. I'm just going to try and earn as many until they tell me I get things.
Yeah, yeah. I guess like the right way to go about it,
which is probably what I'm going to do, and we'll see how Liverpool goes.
All right, well, a few things before we sign off here. So I actually wanted just to ask a general question to Dave and Gus. So we've seen Dave, you've been able to test these formats thoroughly, and we saw no changes in the latest banned and restricted announcement. What's our opinion on the health of formats in Magic? I mean, we're going to have a modern Pro Tour coming up too, and Standard seemed a little bit more diverse in the Nationals metagame as well, compared to, obviously, Willie was firmly correct, not too surprised of that, the Standard was going to be a little bit more diverse Nationals instead of Worlds. So what do you guys think of the health of Magic right now?
I think that Standard is the healthiest it's been in a while. Personal opinion, I think Standard's a bit boring. I think all the decks are a bit basic. There's a good aggro deck. There's a good control deck. There's a good mid-range deck. They're not doing anything weird. But that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And the games are interesting, and they're hard to pilot, and they're hard to sideboard with. That's exactly what you want out of a Standard format. And it's going to stay like that until the new set. I don't think anything's going to pop out of the woodworks and all of a sudden be broken. No bans really needed to happen, though. There's always a million things you can do with Modern. We could be here all day talking about the different things you could do with Modern, possibly, in the unbans and the bannings and the rebans and the policies they should have. I think it's pretty weird that Deathrite Shaman's still a card in Legacy, but that's been the case since the second Miracles went. I'm like, Deathrite Shaman might be a bit of a problem now, and I think it is. I think all these Delver decks that have Deathrite Shamans are a bit ridiculous, and allowing them to play all these colors and Wastelands and Vintage seems fine. Question mark? I don't know. Vintage League. I'll watch it. You're listening to this a couple days later, but I'll be watching the Vintage League a bit tonight and seeing how that goes, I guess. How about you? Gus says he's trying to get back into Magic. He has, you know, so much TOing to do that he doesn't get that much chance.
Hoping to play Standard for once instead. So I think Standard has been doing fine, just from seeing it from the shop perspective. Standard is quite decent. There's enough people playing. Modern is very, very good. I don't know how well it will hold up once the Pro Tour happens. I kind of get the feeling that once you actually have more than like three people who play on the Pro Tour consistently testing it, it probably will get broken in some fashion, and that they'll probably have to do something about it afterwards. But I think it's in a good place. I haven't paid attention to Vintage or Legacy in quite some time, so I can't really comment on them. Maybe it's because there's like reduced coverage of it, with Star City and so on, but it feels like that's definitely been more muted as a format in the communities. Now, there's probably still as many people playing it, but it's definitely downplayed a lot more than it used to be. And I mean, Star City had a Modern tournament this weekend, right? At the same time as US Nationals, and that still probably had multiple hundreds of people playing. I do think Legacy is going to continue to be kind of pushed to the sideways somewhat. Format I think that is having trouble is I don't think Draft is that good. I don't think this set is great, and I don't know how long it's going to last before people get a bit bored of it.
Yeah, so Dave, what's your opinion on it? Because you were very down on this format. I can't remember if it was a week ago or 2 weeks ago. Have you felt a little bit better anytime since?
I've been doing well at the format, so I feel better. But I know that's just because I enjoy winning. Yeah. And that's always right. going to be... I'm always going to fondly remember sets that I did well. There is something fun about drafting it and trying to... Because it's different to normal drafting, right? You have to find the open tribe, not only the open color. You can recognize black is open, but if you don't know vampires or pirates are open, you don't know what you're doing. Your deck isn't going to be as good as it should be. And finding those niche cards that are signposts of archetypes instead of just colors are really important. So it's interesting to draft. That's where it stops. The games are horrible. Games are awful, awful games of Magic. Frog Magic is the stupidest common I've seen in a while. But River Herald's Boon, I mean, is like the stupidest common trick I've seen in a while. Deacon, even being, you know, not too overtly powerful, rewarding you for that synergy and being a common is stupid. And the fact that the person right next to you can be in black, but you're still tabling these cards at some tables, you know, it rewards an interesting draft, but... In the end, you can look at your deck at the end of a draft and know you're in the top two decks at the table. You don't even need to know what other people are in. I'm in Vampires, I'm in Merfolk. I'm probably the second or the best deck at the table.
I watched multiple games over the weekend where people functionally lost the game on turn two. Yeah. Now, it might have taken four or five turns after that, but they functionally lost. Yeah.
That's pretty much how it is. I mean, I'm kind of enjoying the format because I do enjoy beatdown draft formats. This one is, I'm still medium on it. I'm still enjoying drafting it, but yeah, and maybe in two or three weeks, I probably won't be.
Yeah, it kind of feels like there's not enough decisions to make sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have the deep, you can't check out the other archetypes. Like in Innistrad, there's a reason why it was so good. I mean, it was a very... I would say that was a pretty aggressive format, but you can draft blue-red, you can draft green-red, you can draft all the different color combinations, and something could work. With this, it's like blue-green, like, you have to draft, like, Merfolk, pretty much. And you I kind of compare it to Return to Ravnica, kind of. Like, you couldn't really draft white-red in that. Yeah. You have to be green, you have to be green-white. Like, it's very specific.
Too parasitic.
So,
in that sense.
Yeah. And that format wasn't terrible, but it was just kind of meh. Yeah. It was okay. That's kind of where I'm at on this format. I don't think it's the worst of all time, like Dave proclaimed.
No, it's definitely not that bad. Like, I've drafted worse formats than this. I do think it's going to suffer because it's in the Wizards release schedule, so it has the longest amount of time before anything happens to it, because it's 3 months before something else comes out in terms of drafting. Now, they have, like... Man. Iconic Masters and Unstable, but I don't think they're going to be designed to distract people for very long.
Man, Gus, it's good to have you on the cast. It's a good balance between Dave. I need help sometimes.
that's a pro. I was going to give it another pro and con. That's a con I was going to give it. When I won Nationals, I was like, okay, when's the next draft format out so I can start testing that for Limited? Like, no, it's Ixalan.
Yeah. I'm
like, oh... Oh, Dragon's Maze! Like, it's such a disaster. If you think this is a bad format to draft, you should have checked out the Team Sealed pools that are coming out. There's a Vampires deck, there's a Merfolk deck, and there's whatever tribe was left over out of your cards. It is really boring. You just look at your pool. Here are the most tribal synergies we have. That is one of the decks. And yeah, people are going to argue you can do other stuff. You actively shouldn't be doing other things unless your pool is bad. So yeah, there's like clever things you can do, but that's really stupid. Just be the Pirates deck, just be the Merfolk's deck and whatever's left. Mm. And you're correct. If you probably don't have a Merfolk or a Vampire deck, you either misbuilt your pool or you got really unlucky. And that's terrible. I've opened up a few of my prize boosters to do some of these pools by myself that I'm going to give them to my teammates later. Get them to build it so we can compare notes, but it's awful. The pro to this I will give is, as I said, drafting is a bit different. So there are sets like Origins where both drafting and playing aren't fun. And that's a truly bad set. And maybe I can move it down a few notches in my, you know, worst sets of all time. Maybe it's like Avacyn or Stored, Origins, and then a draw between BFC and this set. Maybe that's a fair order to give it, but like...
It's Cold Snap
surely is down
make the
there,
cut.
Yeah.
Oh, Cold Snap is so much fun. You put so many enchantments in your teardrop.
I mean, I'll give Cold Snap credit in that, like, you genuinely lost the game on turn two, so you didn't have to keep playing. There's a picture
of a really old Irish Nationals, one I didn't attend actually. I was in Holland seeing family that month. And it's the 2-mana 2/1 trampler, and someone plays the Surge Enchantment +2/+2 and hits 4 of them on turn
so
3.
So he just bashes them for 14 or something on turn 2.
Yeah, they just die on turn 4. It's so funny.
Nice format.
That format is also awful, but it's only awful because of Surge. It's really weird.
It's Ripple.
Yeah.
Or Ripple, yeah. Ripple. But there's actually some cool archetypes, and you have to like balance taking snow permanents that are a lot worse than the normal cards, but you need their payoffs. So there's actual drafting strategy, but Ripple was absolutely stupid and kind of wrecked it.
I don't know. I don't think it's nearly as bad as some of those draft formats, but it's just kind of there. I think it suffers for its power level as well. There's a definite decision to make it lower on the power scale to try and pull things back a little. And that's probably partially why I'm deciding to play energy for the next year. Because I don't think the mechanics are going to be as powerful as that mechanic.
Yeah. Well, here's a good example of why the set is a bit backwards. Now, this guy I'm about to talk about isn't exactly getting punished, but his name is David Martin. He's a very good friend of me and Gus's, and he decided to come back and play just for Nationals. He is like the poster boy of why Nationals should exist. He plays a bunch of other games, doesn't have time for Magic, and the second he heard Nationals was back, he made an effort to qualify from 0 Planeswalker points to the 100 he needed, and he made an effort and was very happy, had a good weekend. He went into draft 4-1 in contention. He was bottom OMP, but that could actually work out better because you might get some concessions. The pods are very weird. That's something else I think both me and Gus would correct. Never have draft at the end as the last rounds. But he didn't know how to draft the format. And I tried to give him a quick, you know, it's a fast format, there's tribal synergies. But he ended up in kind of a off pirate blue-black deck. But if you would show me this deck in an average draft format, it looks powerful. It just wasn't. None of the cards he drafted were bad. There's nothing he said he passed that I'm like, yeah, you definitely shouldn't have passed that. That's a broken card. But he didn't cement himself into a tribe, so his deck was just below average, no matter how decent it looked. And he went 1-2. Or he lost 2 and then he dropped, I think, because he wasn't in contention anymore.
Yeah, he did.
So that sucked. It kind of sucks. Now, obviously, if this guy, if he had a bit more time, he said his computer was broken, so he couldn't draft online. He said he would have just done 10, 20 drafts leading up to Nationals, and then he would have done better. Mm-hmm. But the set is so unintuitive that, you know, this person who knows how to draft just has no idea what's good or not. He picks removal spells and what look like good creatures, and he's not close to it being a good deck in this draft format. Now, that stays interesting for a little while, but it also becomes really tedious, I think.
It just really makes me want to draft Lorwyn.
Yes, it does. The set does make
I never got to draft that format, man.
Oh, it's such a good format, yeah.
It's good.
Unfortunately, Connor, it's really expensive to buy. Because I looked into it.
They have it online at the end of the year for some reason. So I will be able to play it. Maybe I'll Skype you guys on that.
It's so much fun. Now, unfortunately, it kind of loses a bit because a lot of those cards were built with damage on the stack in mind. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the first time Planeswalkers show up and are rare.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit unfair for to retrieve them. And also, you can get Shriek mods sometimes, which
is also great. Thundercloud Shaman is way worse.
That card is way worse.
Yeah.
That card is way worse. No, that was a lot of fun. I was also really bad when I played that set at first.
I did bring that up, though, because I think that's one of the issues that Lorwyn was able to get around, in that they had Changelings, which kind of bridged the gap a lot. So you could have these generic cards that they were just very basic. So they're like grizzly bears and so on, but they had every creature type. So they helped with your tribal stuff if you needed to. And it also meant that you could get some kind of weird decks then out of it, because there was, I know early on, there's this like really funky giant deck where it's like a one drop elf who gets pumped every time you play a warrior or a giant or something. And you just draft all the changelings with them. So it's just one drop who becomes like a 5/5 on turn 4. And that, like, that's the kind of thing it's missing. It's missing those kind of inter synergies that you can kind of mix. Like, yeah, nothing seems to work outside of its tribe particularly well.
I think those are all valid points on this format. And yep, sorry, Dave, you're going to have to live with it a little bit more. But hopefully it'll bring you good luck again for the World Magic Cup. So that's going to be a fun tournament. Yeah. Is that in November?
No, that's December. First weekend of December. So December 3rd, I think.
All right. Well, I hope this one turns out as a better experience for you this time
around.
As long
as it's not in an abandoned factory. Well, it should be.
Yeah. Who knows? All right. Well, before we sign off, Gus, we talk wrestling on our wrestling cast, and we don't really get to talk about music. And I know you're a big music guy. I love music, and so I wanted to kind of end the cast on something. I wanted to have you share a hidden gem album that I must listen to because I have a need to expand my music playlist. Dave, you can recommend one as well.
God, well, I'm going to try and pick something that I've listened to this year just to.
I mean, it could just be an old album that I wouldn't think of. I don't know.
So I'm going to give you one from this year anyway. This is, I don't know how much you're going to like. It's kind of Depeche Mode-y style, right? Yeah. But it's these guys. They're originally a black metal band. Okay. And they're called Ulver. So the name of the album is The Assassination of Julius Caesar.
Okay. It's an
excellent, excellent electronica style album from that. And then, I don't know, I'll go with my favorite album. But you, I'm sure you've listened to it. It's And Justice for All.
Yep, of course. I was actually listening to it the other day. That was one of the first albums I bought on cassette tape.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely my favorite album. And I'm going to see them this week, so.
Nice!
Yeah.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah, for those who don't know, we're talking about Metallica.
Yeah, I'm traveling to London just for a day, just to go see them and then go home again.
Wow. Awesome. Nice. All right, Dave.
So, funny enough... So I'm a Napster kid, you know. I wasn't that rich like growing up.
Are we all Napster kids?
Yeah, but I just didn't buy albums because the first I wasn't that into music when I was younger.
Lars is
Lars, speaking of Metallica, he is very mad at me. And I just downloaded individual songs on Napster. I didn't really get into albums. I enjoyed my parents' music, but they were never, you know, huge into it. Gus actually kind of got me into listening into albums more and more. He's a big music guy and he's very much into listening to a full album, how an artist kind of wants you to. So I've listened to a lot more since I've known Gus better. Cali would be the same as well. At the moment, I love Run the Jewels. I think they're one of the best kind of rap hip-hop, probably more rap artists out there. Run the Jewels 3 is an amazing album. And I'd highly recommend anyone that's into rap listening to that.
Run the Jewels, is that?
Yeah, Run the Jewels, yeah.
Okay.
Or TJ.
If you've seen any films this year, Connor, you've probably heard at least one track because they're on so many soundtracks this year.
Okay, good. No, this is exactly what I was asking for, so perfect. Yeah. I'll give you guys one too because it came up on my random playlist and it just always reminds me of how awesome this album is, and it's a very just unspoken album that doesn't get a lot of coverage, and well, it's kind of a weird album too, but have you guys ever heard of Oysterhead?
Oysterhead sounds really familiar.
Yeah, doesn't it? The name really rings a bell.
So they made one album. The album is called Grand Pecking Order. It is a super group, so it is Les Claypool.
Ah, yes, I have heard
the guitar player from Fish, Trey Estanio, and then the drummer from Police, Stuart Copeland.
Yeah.
It is an amazing album. I mean, live, they were kind of a jam band-ish. Yeah. And sometimes, like, jam bands, like, the studio CDs are kind of meh, but this one, like, it is awesome. Like, you have to listen to this CD. Ever since I bought it, like, it's just been one of my favorite CDs of all time. And anytime it comes on random, it's just like, wow, this album is just so good. Definitely recommend that. Oysterhead, Grand Pecking Order for any of our listeners, too. Yeah, I've always wanted to do that. I know that's a little different from our normal magic stuff, but gotta talk about other stuff sometimes.
It's good to mix it up. Yeah. I was going to ask, Connor, are you looking forward to hearing about how Dave is national champion every week now for the next 4 years worth of podcasts?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I'm so conflicted because, like, I'm tired of, you know, hearing stories about how he loses, but I don't know. It might be not so bad hearing about him win, so I don't know.
Yeah. I will say, Dave, to be fair, I know you said you were quite lucky over the weekend, and I mean, obviously that's going to play a part in it, but it's probably the most relaxed and not chilled, but like you just didn't seem bothered when you were playing. Like you didn't seem nearly as stressed as you used to be. So I don't know, maybe if it's because you finally had made a Pro Tour and had won something, but it didn't seem to work yourself up nearly as much as you used to.
Fair point. I was just kind of happy Nationals was back, I guess.
Hmm. Okay.
You know, I had a bit of the attitude as if I end up getting knocked out, I'd be bummed out. You know, Ireland isn't a pushover country. There's good players, but I would expect myself to be making the team. That is my goal going in. But I wouldn't have been as bummed out. It was Nationals. I would have had, there was a bar like 5 seconds walk away. I would have had a couple of drinks and come back and watch people play. It's not a big deal. It's a big tournament that I still just get to sleep in my house at night, you know? So
well, we'll see. You might have to travel next year. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. We'll see you next year, guys. Yeah.
And I mean, you made the right deck choice, or at least obviously it paid off, but you know, you said you got lucky, but that's what Mono Red does, and that's why people love to play Mono Red. It punishes those draws. It gives them very few draw steps. If they kept a shaky hand, they don't draw out of it right away, they're toast. They die right away. So
yeah, it is certainly what happened a lot.
All right, anything else before I wrap it up?
Yeah, just before you wrap it up, I wanted to give a quick shout out. It's a very Irish podcast, but it's called Skull Crack. That's a crack with C, what's a C R A I C?
Yeah.
Is that how they spell it? Yeah, crack. Yeah, yeah. Which in Irish, crack means to have fun, to have banter. It has the other guy that was in the finals with me, Dave Wolf. And maybe it wouldn't always be your cup of tea. It is kind of Irish based and what these guys think personally about Magic. But it has some, he did some interesting interviews with people at Nationals, and I think he did a very good job at them. And I think they're going to be on their next episode. So I do recommend checking that out if you have time.
Excellent. Yeah, I'll put that in the show notes for sure. So that is going to do it for this episode. Gus, where can our listeners get a hold of you, and feel free to plug your podcast here?
I mean, I suppose the only real way people will find me is through Twitter if they really want to come pester me. And that's @Fergus_Looney, because I'm boring like that. But yeah, you should definitely check out the Nerdy Irish Podcast. It's a bunch of us basically half drunk talking about anything nerd or hobby related. So if you want to hear about TV, film, games, anything at all like that, we do that like once a week. And we're foolish enough to try and record a live one. So if you want to see me really, really drunk talking about things and being obnoxious, you should check that out. Also, obviously check out the WCW versus NWO podcast, which we're all on. So yeah, there's no excuse. If you like us now, you should listen to us talk about wrestling, particularly bad WCW wrestling.
Yeah, seriously. And if you want less of me or more and more of Dave, Dave is the host of that one, so if you want more Dave, that's the podcast for you.
My sultry tones.
All right, well, for me, hit me up on Twitter @ConnorPOdonnell. Dave, how can one contact the Irish national champion for Mono Red sideboarding advice?
I don't know if I need you want to be going to me for that kind of advice, but you can watch me on Twitch 5-6 days a week. Dave C there, that's SEA. Find me on Twitter, DaveC89, again, SEA, and I'm willing to talk about any subject here at all. Just hit me up on that. And I do articles for trolltrader.com as well. My national report is up there actually at the moment.
Yep, and of course in the show notes too. So Gus, thanks again for coming on the show. I know this was very short notice, but you're always a pleasure to record with.
Always happy to do it. I like talking about Magic.
Yep, we'll definitely have you on another time. But that will wrap up this episode. Remember, you can find the show every week on cardhoarder.com. Next week, we'll definitely talk more about Arena since the Streamer Challenge is this week. But until then, thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.
Dave, did you ever tell them what your moto name means?
I don't know if I've actually told it on the cast. I've told it on the stream so much.
Okay. Do you know what it is, Connor?
I thought you did. It has something to do with you're a bad speller.
Yeah.
I thought we talked about that in the cast. I can't remember. Maybe it was just on your stream.
It was just funny when you were talking about that you're the Irish national champion. I was like, I'd forgot. It just triggered me there, going, "Oh yeah, it's the self world proclaimed champion."
Yeah, someone put up a self national world proclaimed champion on my on somewhere on Facebook. Was it Ken? I think Ken put that up somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
People were way happier than I won this than I did anything. So I'm not saying that this isn't a massive accomplishment. I'm not mega happy. But arguably, you could say going X3 at a GP is more important long term. You know what I mean? Like, I'm happier that I won this than my GP results. But going X3 at the GP was definitely harder. But I got like 600 likes on my Twitter page for winning this instead.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
The publicity, man.
Yeah, I'm going to try and milk it. It's going to be my stream, my title of my stream for like a month.
Just change your Twitter handle to like
there you go.
Irish national champion.